You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
Law and order have broken down in Detroit, Michigan.
We looked down 12th Street and all you seen was fire and smoke.
Oh, the motor city is burning.
Those shots are being fired on 12th Street.
Chaos. Chaos. Just everywhere. People everywhere.
I said, this can't be happening to my city.
The madness overtook everything.
Anything in the world that Johnny can do.
The violence in Detroit in the summer of 1967 destroyed large swaths of the city, mostly in black neighborhoods, but it also energized the political ambitions of the city's African-American citizens. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, which opened just a few months before the trouble broke out, wanted to turn the black church into a political force in Detroit. Its founder, Albert Clegg, combined the church's history and civil rights activism with an emerging black nationalist movement. As the nephew of the Shrine's first leader, Wayne County Executive Warren Evans has a very unique take on how that summer of 67 changed the course of religious and political life for black people in Detroit. And Warren Evans had a front row seat to the chaos that broke out less than two blocks from his home.
I guess the main memory, I think I was about 17 or 18, I guess I ought to be able to do the math, was hunkered down in my grandmother's house, which was probably a block and a half from 12th and Claremont, where the riot or rebellion started. We were on Atkinson between 14th Street and LaSalle, and so was close enough to watch the tanks and, you know, be concerned about what was going on out there that you obviously couldn't see from your house. I mean, the golden rule in our household then is you're not going to leave the house until this thing's over, and there's no wandering around looking or taking pictures or anything else. A real concern about, you know, everyone's personal safety.
Did it feel surreal, I guess, like this is happening right here where I live?
Yeah, it did. And you know, coming from a family who was actively involved in civil rights and, you know, was not unused to concerns about the police and concerns about, you know, potential violence. I mean, we were not only hunkered down in the house, but hunkered down in the house to protect it if, in fact, you know, there were assaults on the house or that sort of thing. So, you know, you grow up quickly when you're 16 or 17 years old, sitting around the house in dark clothing waiting for whatever confusion might have happened. Thank God nothing did. But, yeah, it's a quick maturation process, I think, in terms of life's realities.
So that was your perspective as a, you know, 16 or 17-year-old kid. What about your uncle? What about Reverend Albert Clegg? How did that week impact him?
I guess I would say that in many respects, it helped, in his mind at least, to help to emphasize that the concerns that the church and oftentimes, you know, black people in general had complained about were in fact real, and they were real enough for people to at some point say this is enough and kind of explode. It appeared to me that the mayor at the time was very, very surprised. It's kind of interesting. His son and I have been political rivals at different times, so this is how generational changes come. But I think it's safe to say that the mayor was very, very surprised that there was that level of discontent in the African-American community. And I think a lot of that was the fact that the people in the community that he talked to were not those generally impacted by the conditions. And so, you know, while he had entrees into the black community, it wasn't at the neighborhood, you know, walk the street level. And so I think my uncle was not at all surprised that this would happen. I think people in the city structure were very, very surprised that it did.
And of course, we're referring to Mayor Jerome Kavanaugh. And your uncle, as an activist, I mean, he ran for governor of Michigan in 1964. Well, what was his campaign platform?
Freedom Now was the party, and I had several relatives that ran on that slate at that period of time. And it was a black self-determination issue. I mean, the expectation wasn't necessarily that you'd win. The expectation was that you'd be able to galvanize people of color throughout the state to see the issues in a couple of ways. One is, you know, what's the urban agenda for black people? But also, you know, back then, the very fact that you ought to be able to feel comfortable as an African-American voting for an African-American. I mean, it might sound strange to people today, but it wasn't overly strange then. There were people that would have been a foray into an area that they hadn't done before and didn't always have the confidence that that was something they should, could, or would do.
Reverend Clegg was a member of the new Detroit committee. Longtime Michiganders may recall that that was founded by Max Fischer, kind of designed to heal the many divisions in the city that this week exposed. But he left New Detroit. Why was that?
I think, you know, the need to understand and acknowledge more quickly and more significantly the conditions or the plight of people of color in the city. And I think he was extremely frustrated at the slow movement. If you're an activist, a whole lot of dialogue doesn't go well for most of us. And so I think it was that, you know, like we're not moving fast enough. People aren't identifying the problem clearly enough. And I think it was more a protest with respect to that.
As you talked with your uncle following that week of rebellion, what did he feel was the main lesson from that week?
That people of color needed to work more closely together to help create their own institutions, to have their own support groups. And it certainly didn't mean not to interact with other groups, but the idea that you could have an African-American community and it could be viable, you know, economically with respect to business, and you could have quality schools and those sorts of things were things that he believed were extremely important.
And 67 was the year that your uncle, Reverend Clegg, founded the Black Christian National Movement and renamed his church the Shrine of the Black Madonna. That was actually, am I right, before July of 67?
My recollection is that is so. I mean, the church had been going through a transition from a congregational church to the Shrine for, you know, at a period of time. And, you know, I'm always amazed at whatever churches there are, how much politics is involved in in churches. So, I mean, the church had been making, you know, a transition for some time. It wasn't a quick sort of thing. And I think the rebellion or the riot exacerbated that movement to become more active and more vocal. And the church kind of morphed at that time.
And a greater Black identity, stronger Black identity.
Absolutely.
And how was the Shrine of the Black Madonna? How did it become a force in reshaping Detroit politics after 1967?
Well, you know, I mean, part of the whole kind of church experience is this issue of whether religion and politics can merge at some point in a way that makes sense. Obviously, the Shrine felt that it could and felt that without the political input and without the political strength, the social issues, we're not going to be moved on and we're not going to be dealt with as significantly. And so the church formed an organization outside of the church called the Black Slate. And for many, many years, the Black Slate was a powerful force in endorsing and supporting candidates. I mean, put a lot of people on the street in terms of poll workers, did a lot of community outreach to educate people on the issues, and many an elected official, including Coleman Alexander Young, had mentioned for years that they probably would not have been elected had it not been for the aggressive impact of the Black Slate.
And if you want to talk about a force of nature in reshaping everything about the city of Detroit, you just said that name, Coleman Alexander Young. What a force he was in the city's history.
Yeah, I think that's exactly true. I mean, I know he could be abrasive at times, and I think people overreacted sometimes to the things he said and did. But one of the things that I think is very, very hard for anybody to argue is today it makes a difference when you think about 67 is the changes in the police department from top to bottom. He was extremely instrumental in making sure that officers were recruited that more clearly represented the population of the city, and not just officers on the street, but the command structure. You know, there were ranking officers of color, not just officers on the street. And while, you know, color doesn't make you a good officer, it certainly helps to create a tenor for it not being an occupying army or being an employer that has people that, you know, that looks like it's citizenry. And I think that's made an awful lot of difference over the years. And I think when you look at cities that are powder kegs and have been in the last several years, one of the things you look to is, you know, how much does the police department look like the community it serves? And in virtually every one, there was a strong, strong underrepresentation of people of color and women. So I think that's an ingredient that is significantly different about Detroit. And I think it's, while, you know, we still have our problems and we have issues, I don't think the police community relations issue, generally speaking, is near as negative and intense as you'll find in in many, many cities throughout the country.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with Wayne County Executive Warren Evans as we review the 50-year mark, looking back at the impact of the summer of 1967. Something we're asking everyone, and I'm noticing you go back and forth too, riot or rebellion? What word speaks to you?
Rebellion, I think, because it's an attempt to respond to oppressive practices and things that are oppressive. I mean, but I certainly understand, you know, when property and businesses are destroyed, and you can't always make rhyme or reason out of that happening. I mean, the word riot is not, you know, a far-fetched term. I have been raised thinking about it in terms of a rebellion, but I'm not going to start a fight with anybody about which term we use.
When you think about where we are at this 50-year mark, clearly, as you point out, things are much better in the terms of policing in Detroit. Do you still see some of the same problems still lingering that led to that explosion in 1967?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the wealth disparity in the city today is significant. I mean, the city is rebounding and going places economically, but, I mean, there's a historical underclass there that hasn't seen benefit of any of this. And as long as you're starting to create, you know, more high-end folks and not doing anything substantial, and, you know, folks will argue about what's substantial for people at the poverty level, you are not alleviating the root causes of ongoing problems. And so that, along with, I think, an abysmally bad education system, are things that will be problematic until we get the foresight to get out in front of it and understand that, you know, when you talk about, you know, job development and workforce development and those sorts of things, when you're talking about people who have been chronically poor and poorly educated, that it's not just a program that you start at the corner. There are a bunch of social issues that need to be dealt with, you know, education clearly being one, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, to get many people in a position to be able to take advantage of opportunities that are there. So if we want to have one Detroit, it's got to include, I think, a lot more people than we're currently impacting. And that's not to say that the city isn't making valiant attempts to move in the right direction. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm suggesting that there's an awful lot more to do. And those of us who are realists understand that. And, you know, it kind of shades the progress a little bit because the progress has to be more global and has to be more intense. And those are the issues with respect to the city that I'm very, very concerned about. And quite frankly, some of our suburban communities that are in the same kind of shape. Mm-hmm. They're smaller, they're broke, the issues are the same. And opportunities have to be created to deal with those things. If that's attempted in a significant way, then people will buy in. I mean, people kind of understand the feeling of being empowered and not being empowered. And so when we make attempts like that, it's not necessarily that we have to employ everyone before people start feeling better. They start feeling better when they see opportunities and government looking at them in a little different light and saying, you know, you're customers too, and you're citizens too, and we're going to try to do things to improve your plight.
Warren Evans is the Wayne County Executive. We want to thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.